The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha. Today I'm going to talk about attentiveness. That's what I got. Attentiveness. So I looked it up. I like to look things up. And there are a number of implications in the word attentiveness. It comes to attending. Attentiveness, you're attending. And that comes from tend, to take care of something or someone. Tending. Well, attentiveness is, first of all, paying attention. And this is largely mindfulness. Largely mindfulness, but not entirely, it's not quite the same thing. Being aware of what we're doing, aware of what we're saying, thinking, paying attention to what we're up to. Taking care with our thoughts, our words and our actions. And when we're walking, just walking. Or when we're sitting, just sitting. Easier said than done, as we know. But it's not just focused on ourselves and what we're doing. It's also being aware of what's going on around us. When we're walking, we can be very mindful walking along, but are we treading on little plants, you know? If we see an insect on the sidewalk or on the cloister, are we taking care, noticing, oh, it's going to get squashed, taking it out of the way? That's being attentive, being mindful. Hopefully it involves that, but sometimes people can think they're being mindful, but actually there's sort of a self-focus there. And I think attentiveness is wider than that, wider than just what I'm doing. Then there's attentiveness to detail, doing things carefully, treating things gently and with respect. Not just bashing through to get things done. I've talked about this many times, this kitchen cleanup, as we know, not just rushing through to, you know, crashing through the dishes to get it done and go somewhere else. Attentiveness to detail, taking care, treating things with respect, gentleness. The things we use have given themselves to us, actually. And we need to treat them with care and with gratitude, not just take them for granted. These patient dishes, or these the table we put things on, or the chairs we sit on, there they are, patiently waiting for us to use them. Treat them with care, with attentiveness. Here in the monastery, as those of us who are here know, we pay a lot of attention to the details of how we do things. Great Master Dogen says, study in detail. And he wrote about it copiously in the Shobogenzo. In traditional Zen temples, there's a lot of, detail of ceremonial, taking a bath, eating a meal, all these things we do on a daily basis, all kinds of details. And in Zen is Eternal Life, Reverend Master G.U. put in a lot of chapters, a number of chapters about the details of how you do things, how you conduct morning meditation, how you have the meals, how the cook prepares food, how we treat each other, all these things, minute details. You think, why did she do this? Why did she put in all these chapters about what they did in a, you know, Dogen learned that in China, wrote it about it, passed it on to his temple in Japan. Here we are in America. Why are we still doing all this? Well, we don't do all of it. We do a lot of it, but we simplified it quite a bit. But this attentiveness to the details of daily life is essential to our practice, and that's why Reverend Master put those chapters in her book. An introduction to Zen training, and all these chapters about how you take a bath and all that. Well, a lot of them very Japanese in their flavor, and yet this attention to detail is what's coming across. Well, as I said, we simplified many of these things here at the Abbey, but we still place a lot of emphasis on the details of how we do things, how we do our ceremonial, how we, recite verses for our taking meals. We have verses we say for that. when we go to the bathroom, when we clean our teeth. There are verses we recite on our own for each of these things to remind us to take care, to pay attention, attentiveness. Nothing is unworthy of our care and respect. And as we pay attention to the things and take care with them, pay attention to the details of our lives, we also take care with people, you know. Nothing is unworthy of our attention. No one is unworthy of our attention. So we treat things and people with care and respect, attentiveness. Attentiveness is awareness also of other people, of our effect on other people, or how they're feeling. I can be mindfully washing the dishes and completely oblivious to somebody who's upset or needs my help. Mindfully and slowly chopping the vegetables, oblivious to the fact that we need to get lunch out, you know. And the cook may be thinking, can we get a move on here? You know, very beautiful, but let's get on with it. I can think I'm having a nice and friendly conversation with somebody, and actually, I think I'm paying attention, but in fact, I'm insisting on my own way and I'm not listening to them. So they feel kind of driven into a corner, maybe. Am I paying attention? Am I being attentive? In a way I am, but actually I'm being oblivious in a certain way. So there's all kinds of ways of being attentive that we can miss when we think we're being mindful or we're focusing too narrowly. Listening. Attentiveness means listening, paying attention to what somebody is saying. It's surprising how much we miss when we think we're listening to somebody else. How much our own thoughts and opinions get in the way. How often we're planning what we're going to say when they stop speaking, you know, rather than just listening. As we all know, I'm sure, from our own experience, we're talking about something, stop to draw a breath, and somebody else jumps in with their story that they've been planning. And it's obvious to us they haven't really been listening to us. They've been getting their story ready. And furthermore, they often just derail the whole thing to some other topic. We think, oh, well, so much for that, you know. It's a little disheartening. And it's so easy to do, to have your story ready to jump in with, rather than just listen to what a person is saying. So constantly needing to have things repeated might be a clue that we're not being very attentive. Some of us may be hard to understand. I know I talk too fast. I like to slow down. But there's also an aspect of willingness to listen, of attentiveness, being present, that's involved. If we're just sort of not really being, what was that? You know, if we're being attentive, we're more likely to hear. Real attentiveness is an open thing. We're not just focused on one little thing. It's an open, broader thing. We can be really attentive when we're watching a good movie and then not notice we've eaten a whole bag of potato chips. And now we don't feel so good, you know. We might have been attentive, but we weren't very mindful. I'm sure we all know this. Being focused on our computer or our phone, even more so, and not notice when our child or our dog or our cat wants our attention. We're so busy doing this thing, we don't notice that they're trying to get on our, you know. This happens all the time. I'm sure it happens. It happens to me. This very morning I did it. I ignored my poor cat. There he was, waiting for my attention. I was paying to thinking of something else. Finally he gets up and stamps away in disgust. And then I had to go and make amends. You know, of course he didn't care. It's seeing the needs of other beings. Attentiveness, attending, not just being stuck in the thing that engages our interest. Easy to miss, you know, to get so absorbed in what we're doing. That's the, I think, one of the worst things about the internet and the phones and all that is that, you know, as we know, people go around like this and oblivious to the people they're with. Thoughtfulness. Attentiveness means thoughtfulness, consideration for others. When Reverend Master Jiyu was alive, I spent a lot of time as one of her assistants. A great blessing and really hard. because attentiveness in all its aspects was called for all the time. To be paying attention, to be listening to what she said, the first time to hear it, not to ask her to repeat it. You know, she did not like being asked to repeat herself. So he had to pay attention. Just be speaking, oh, ears up, what you're saying. You know. To see what needed to be done and to do it. To know when to ask her a question about something, when to offer her a cup of tea, or when to just sit there quietly and not do anything. Or just come in and out doing a job and not be asking her stuff. To be willing to go off and look for something. Or simply sit with her at any time of the day or night. And this is a wonderful training in attentiveness. You just had to put down the agenda, you know. Sometimes she'd call you over. Come on, I need you over here. And you'd go in and you'd be sitting there and think, well, and then either she would, you know, things would pass or just want you to sit there and be quiet with her. So many different things, and it all called for attentiveness, what's needed, and really listening and paying attention. The stories of the Buddha, full of examples of attentiveness and inattentiveness. There's one story where the Buddha is out walking with one of his disciples, an assistant, who's carrying his bowls and so forth. And they come to a fork in the road. And the Buddha says, we're going to go this way. The disciple says, oh, no, no, we should go this way. No, this is the way to go. No, 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 we're going to go this way. Finally, the disciple puts down the Buddha's bowls, stamps off, gets beaten up, and mugged, and survives. But I think he might have learned something, you know, to actually pay attention. You know, he thought he was being attentive, doing the right thing, but no. Ananda. Ananda was the Buddha's great attendant. For 25 years, he was his attendant. And it was a great blessing. People praised him for his attentiveness. And every now and then, Ananda would drop the ball. When the Buddha is his last illness, he's sick, he's actually dying, and he wants to go back to Kushinagara. Is that where he died? Okay, good. And they have quite a long way to go, so he's walking with Ananda. And finally, the Buddha needs to lie down and rest. He's exhausted and not feeling well. And he says to Ananda, there's a stream flowing across the road. He says to Ananda, get me some water from that stream. And Ananda says, it's muddy. The cattle have just been across. And you don't want that. Let's go a little further and get some nicer water. The Buddha again asks him, please just give me some water from there. No. Third time, finally, Ananda says, okay. He goes over to the stream. And miraculously, it clears. Gets some nice, clear water. Brings it back to the Buddha. Before this, though, this is a worse thing. Poor old Ananda. The Buddha is sitting there. I can't remember whether it's before he's had his last meal or not. But anyway, he knows he's going to die in 3 months. So he says to Ananda, I'm going to die in 3 months. But if somebody were to ask me to remain, I could stay for the rest of the kalpa. And Ananda doesn't get it. This is a hint. He could actually say to the Buddha, please could you stay with us? We'd like to have you here for the end of the kalpa. But Ananda's mind is clouded by Mara. I think we all know what that's like when there's something we should be doing and we just don't get it. And later we think, how could I have been so dumb? Of course I should have done it. But no, Ananda doesn't get it. And then the Buddha says, you just go away and leave me by myself for a little bit. And then the Buddha's on his own. Mara comes and says, ha-ha, good to go in 3 months, are we? And yes, so Ananda comes back, and the Buddha tells him this. He says, you know, you could have asked me to remain, and I didn't, and you didn't, and so I'm going to die in 3 months. Well, can you imagine what that's like, you know? You had the opportunity to ask the Buddha to stay, and you didn't, so he's going to die? I mean, really? But anyway, they go back to, they go off to Kushinagara, and the other monks hear about this. And after the Buddha has died, they give poor old Ananda a terrible time about this. He could have stayed for the rest of the kalpa and you didn't ask him, you know. So I feel for Ananda. I know what it's like to be an attendant, an assistant, and it ain't easy. So, but he was also really attentive. He knew when to have people come and see the Buddha. He knew when to ask them to leave him alone. He would ask people their problems. He'd do all kinds of sorting out and kind things for people. But the things people remembered when he was when he wasn't attentive. So it's easy to miss the ball. Attentiveness is openness, receptiveness, like being open to the hint, you know, or receptive to what needs to be done or what we can hear. It's being empty in a certain way, not full of our own ideas, opinions, views, thoughts, busyness, desires, things we need to do, things we want to do, all that stuff that can fill our minds night and day. To let all that go. It may come through, but not to fill our mind with all that stuff so we can't hear anything or we can't receive anything. When we're empty, we're quiet. And when we're quiet, we can hear. The still small voice that Rav Mataji talks about, if we're quiet, we're more likely to hear that. Or that little voice inside us, or that little feeling that says, I wouldn't do that if I were you. Or, not a good idea. Don't do that. Don't go that way. Just like the Buddha with his attendant. Don't go that way. You know? Listen to hear that. Can we be attentive and hear that? A little feeling or a little voice that says, I wouldn't do that. The feeling that it's not good to do or that it is good to do. Yes, good to do it. Let's go for it. That sort of feeling of, you know, and even then to sort of think, is this really good or am I just thinking what I'd like to do? To be attentive, to see what's really needed. You know? And this is the real attentiveness. And this is really why we train in attentiveness. Why Rev. Master Jiyu trained us the way she did. To pay attention, to attend, be attentive. So that we can attend to the most important thing, the great matter for which we train. Buddha nature, that which embraces everything, whatever you want to call it. I don't like any of the ways we can call it, but anyway. That which we point to, which we aim our heart towards, that we try to live in harmony with. To be open to that, to entrust ourselves to it. To do our best to live in harmony with it. To be attentive. To be empty and still and quiet within. To relinquish our selfishness that always wants something. Because in real attentiveness, there's no room for selfishness. We're open, empty, sitting still in faith, attending. And taking care with things, taking care with people, taking care with other beings, taking care with ourselves, with our thoughts and words and actions. And to do all this is to take care of the great matter, with the great matter for which we train. And that's our little talk on attentiveness for today.